This TFMR podcast is brought to you by your friends at JM Bullion. Visit jmbullion.com for all your gold and silver bullion needs. Well, greetings out there to everybody at TFMR. Hey, it's Thursday, May the 27th. You know what that means. It's time for another Thursday conversation. And man, I've got somebody completely new for you this week. Someone who was, I hesitate to call him a longtime turdite, but I have to tell you, he was somebody that was on our site a long time ago, a decade ago when this first got started. I'm sure was even reading back in the old Watchtower days. His name is Tom Luongo, and he's got a really interesting background and is clearly a very smart guy. And I'm really glad to have him back, which is called in the blogosphere, with his site Gold, Goats, and Guns. And I, because of where we are within the market and with all these different things going on, so many different directions, and with what he wrote last week about Basel III, I thought, man, I'm going to reach out to Tom, see if I can't get him in. So anyway, Tom Luongo, thank you for joining me.
Oh, thank you, Craig. I really appreciate the opportunity to finally, make the acquaintance, become, part of the, officially part of the whole community again. It's been a long time.
So. Yeah, and it's great fun. It's a pleasure to finally get a chance to meet you, because I've mentioned this a couple times before. It's like we have a Venn diagram where our circles have crossed, but we just never get a chance to really get a chance to talk.
I've had to do the same thing. I've had to reach out to people for my podcast to do the same thing. And it's, when we finally, why haven't we met before?
Right.
And I did this with Dave Collum a few months ago.
Right.
And, and I did do it regularly with people. So it's half the reason I started the podcast was to do that. Just so I could have an excuse to reach out to people that I respect and go, dude, I really want to talk to you.
Right.
Will you come on my podcast?
Right. And Dave's a great example. Brilliant guy.
Oh, absolutely.
That applies his brilliant mind to other things other than organic chemistry. And right. So why would you want to just listen to these finance characters that never operated outside of their, their MBA in some Wall Street firm, pulling down their seven figures, when there are other people where they're even smarter that can look at this and form an opinion, really tell you what's going on. I know that's what you do at your site, but before we get started, tell everybody a little bit about your site and what you do there.
Sure. The site's name, as you said, is Gold, Goats, and Guns. And Gold, Goats, and Guns to me is a metaphor for everything that, we should be doing. Is the old adage from Jim Sinclair is be your own central bank, right?
Mm-hmm.
I go way back with Jim Sinclair, and I actually got a chance to meet Jim a few years ago when he was doing his tours. And to me, it's gold, goats, and guns. It's savings, investment, and defense, right?
Yep.
And that's what those three things are. You can find my work over at tomluongo.me. I have both a Patreon where you can sign up for – I do twice weekly video podcasts doing both news analysis and chart analysis, as well as the monthly investment newsletter with a whole bespoke portfolio thing, designed for the retail investment investor to make some sense of what to do in terms of taking long-term positions to protect themselves. As to all this craziness that's going on that you and I, have been chronicling for 15 years now. So that's what I do.
I'll put a link on this page. What's the actual web address though?
Sure. It's tomluongo.me.
That's easy enough. Luongo. That's
yes, sir.
Nice and simple. Well, we'll put that on this page so everybody can go there and check out your site. Tom, as I mentioned, the thing that really got me off my duff to reach out to you was this article that you wrote last week about Basel III, the net stable funding requirements that are coming, NFSR.
Mm-hmm.
I spoke with Alistair McLeod last week.
Right.
It's something that's been kicking around, and I got to tell you, a lot of us are so jaded. And I include myself in this.
Absolutely.
You're like, oh, come on. I mean, this is Rob Kirby's term was, this is a dog eating its own tail.
Right.
If they put this on. But again, Basel III was constructed coming out of the financial crisis. Mm. They've had years that this has been percolating. They're just finally now going to start applying it to the EU banks at the end of next month, almost like a month from today. So with that, let me cut. When I spoke with Alistair, we talked about, that at least that EU part's going to kick in.
Absolutely.
And then once that does, that gets the whole ball rolling. But you wrote in your article, and I'll put this on here so everybody can read it. A lot of folks on my site read it last weekend, but I'll put it on here again in case you missed it. I want you just to run with it, because you kind of came at it from maybe let's call it a more holistic approach, right?
Right.
About how all these pieces might fit together. And I thought, well, this is fascinating. Run with it, Tom. Tell us what you think this all means.
So as I wrote in the article, right, Alistair does a great job of breaking down the mechanics of it. I think even Martin Armstrong has been telling us about Basel III on and off for a few years now, saying this is typical of what happens when regulators write bad rules and then they don't realize the secondary and systemic effects of those rules. They do this all the time. Dodd-Frank, this, all the rest of it. And I say to myself, okay, here we are. It's 2021. We've been talking about Basel III forever. Right. In the gold community, we've been talking about it for, you know, this is going to change everything. And yep, kind of the same way that when back in 2005, when Spider was talking about creating a gold ETF and this is going to be great. It's going to increase liquidity for gold. We're finally going to get price discovery. And no, what do we get? We got more tail wagging the dog.
Yeah.
Right. We got an even higher leverage of the paper gold price to the physical price, the gold has even become, you know, physical gold has become more of a price taker than a price maker over the last 15 years. It's part of the reason in some ways toward that I kind of drifted away from the community because I had to get a different headspace to wrap my head around what was actually happening because things weren't coming true. And there was something. And when I went to work for Newsmax back in 2013, taking over Gold Stock Advisor, their newsletter there, I had to, you know, really be on my best game all the time. So I really had to like start broadening my horizon as to what's going on here. And I immediately started looking at the geopolitics and all the things that were changing around the world to try mm-hmm. and get a better sense of the big picture. So the big picture for me is why now?
Right.
Why now? Because we know this is going to create an awful lot of dislocation. So why would they do it? Well, they never make these decisions. And the BIS, the IMF, the World Bank, the UN, none of these people, they're all in the pay and they're all part of what we like to call the powers to be. I call the Davos crowd. There are multiple factions within the Davos crowd. There's multiple factions within the powers to be. And the more I think this through systemically, the more I really like do the multivariate analysis, seven players sitting at the table playing poker scenario, right? I'm like, someone's trying to run the table. And the best way to do that is to look at all the tools and all the pieces of this puzzle that have been out there from all the major analysts like Alistair and Martin and Jim Sinclair and others and say, look, they're going to run the table for their benefit, not ours. Go back to what Jim Sinclair told us all back in 2005. You're not going to make the most money in the gold bull market. JP Morgan is. Goldman Sachs is. The best you can do is ride the wave.
Yeah.
Right? So same thing here. Who benefits, cui bono, who benefits from a rising gold price other than us? And they don't want us to benefit. That's got to be them. And who and which one of them is it? Well, when the ECB can go bankrupt because we're staring at a sovereign debt crisis. I was talking to some people in Italy yesterday, some journalists and financial guys in Italy yesterday. And they told me, look, Italy's done. It's finished. They're going to rape it dry. It's not going to exist. Mario Draghi has been there to brought in to liquidate the country. So they're going to roll up the 2,400 tons of gold that the Italians nominally still have. And they're going to mm-hmm. give that to the ECB.
Mm-hmm.
And the only way the ECB cannot go bankrupt, as Martin Armstrong told us years ago, it can go bankrupt, is if as the sovereign debt and the securities that they have on their balance sheet, which are garbage and are going to go to zero, and they're planning on issuing perpetual bonds anyway, how do you keep the ECB from going bankrupt? Well, you have to raise the price of gold because it's the only other asset they have that actually means anything. And when you start thinking about what 10,000 tons of gold, because that's effectively what they control by controlling the central banks of the countries that have that amount of gold. When you start thinking about that, that's a significant amount of money. And then you start thinking about a $10,000 or $12,000 gold price, and that's enough to offset $7 trillion worth of, you know, garbage sovereign debt.
Right.
And those books balance. At the same time, who's your enemy here? Your enemy is the Fed, who doesn't want the price of gold to rise, because then that's going to call into question everything that the Fed does. And the Fed's going to have to revalue its balance sheet versus a rising gold price. Finally, have it on its balance sheet at something other than $42.22 an ounce and all the attendant effects here and all the breakdown effects. Go one step further. And Martin Armstrong's been banging on that the central banks are going to pitch the commercial banks, which I also wrote about a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
We're going to pitch the commercial banks as chum to the Occupy Wall Street / woke mob, the Elizabeth Warrens and all of that, and the AOCs and the rest of them. They're going to pitch them as the chum while they get away scot-free. And so this is the game. And we're seeing that game being played everywhere. They're starting to burn all of their assets that they used to get rid of Trump, to get control of the U.S. government. They burned Bill Gates in the last 2 weeks. They burned Fauci.
Yeah.
This week, they're setting up a war with China to call COVID a bioterror weapon. Okay? So if they lose control of the U.S. government in the midterm elections, the Chinese are going to turn and Trumpians come back in and take over Congress, and God forbid Trump becomes president again in 2024. We're going to have a war with China. It's going to be a hot war with China. And Davos is setting us up for all of this. And because, you know, I described this in a recent live stream I did. I said, think of it this way. Angela Merkel sitting there with China on one side and the U.S. on the other, and kind of, you know, in a cheerleader's outfit. This is the most horrible image I can put in your head, but, you know, like Patton, when I want it to stick, I give it to you loud and dirty.
Go ahead.
Ready? Which is Angela Merkel in a cheerleader's outfit saying to both Russia and China and the United States and China, Russia, China, and the United States, don't fight over me. No, really. Don't fight over me. And then gleefully watching us fight over everything. Like, that's the scene I see in front of me, dude. It's like, it's this, and it's, and every day I see more and more and more evidence of this. And, you know, and I error check myself all the time, and I ask people to tell me that I'm wrong. And I just don't see it. And I was explaining this stuff to Dave Collin when I talked to him, and he was like, wow, that was different. Because we talked about, he was on my podcast, and we talked about global warming. Because the two chemists got together and just said, you know, let's just talk about global warming, how dumb it is. Right? So it was fun. This is my thesis at this point. And I'm not saying that it's, you know, I'm right. But at the very least, we should be considering it from this perspective. Because what if we've all been wrong about the day gold calls the central bank's bluff?
Well,
what if, like always, they're just going to use it for their own purposes?
And get back to revaluing it higher, which makes, again, like you said, makes their balance sheet look better. You know, there are all these reasons, and this is kind of what I talked about with Alistair, that you could see them doing this. You know, even the Fed, you know, with as much as Powell, you know, with last year was railing against deflation and deflationary expectations, leading to more deflation and more deflation. And now, obviously, he's getting the opposite of that. But I've seen people like Luke Groman argue that the Fed could use a higher gold price as well.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got the banks, obviously, that have, I don't know, you and I see it as a systemic risk. They just see it as a trading desk, you know, their proprietary trading desk that they profit at. Mm-hmm. But they've so levered this kind of pyramid of futures to the physical that they really have taken on a tremendous risk. I remember talking to Andrew McGuire last year, and he said he'd been in a meeting with Andrew Bailey, who at the time was the head British regulator, and now he's the head of the Bank of England. And they were in a meeting, and he was telling this guy, this Bailey, all about this, and this guy was like, what? The banks are still, I mean, it was almost like he was incredulous that they were, that this was still going on.
Right.
So I can see all these forces aligning as to why this implementation is going on. But you think perhaps, though, cutting the banks out to get them so that they're not so much a systemic risk, cutting the banks out because everybody hates them. And if the financial system going forward is going to, we're going to get the commercial banks out of all this proprietary, you know, stuff that they do.
Right.
But then also to then allow for a price discovery. So it's rather than the ECB coming out and saying, officially revaluing gold on their own at a higher price,
right?
Or the Fed for that matter, we're going to allow some actual price discovery that forces a revaluation anyway. How did I do? Did I put all that together?
I think that's about right, Craig. And it's because Europe still sees itself as, because they've aggregated so much economic power under the EU 27, they still see themselves as a big player in the world.
And the ECB can go bankrupt, Tom?
Yes, absolutely.
I don't understand that part. Can you explain that too?
They don't have the ability. They don't have the ability to issue credit money the way the Fed does. It's not the same bank. And so, if their balance sheet degrades, what if German 10-year go to 12%?
Yeah.
I mean, they're fighting them. Fighting to keep them below negative 0.1%, negative 10 basis points, right? What if German 10-year go to 4%?
Yeah.
And Italy goes to 8%.
Yeah.
What happens at that point? what's the ECB's bank, the balance sheet contracts massively because it's all tied mark to market with its, you know, the securities that are sitting on its balance sheet, right? It's like 80% of their balance sheet is securities.
Right.
And then, corporate bonds about too. 10% of it is gold. I mean, and it's crazy. So, and I'm telling you that the goal of this is to kill the national central banks, kill the national governments under the EU27, mm-hmm. all that power up into the ECB. This is why Lagarde was put in place. She's a lawyer. She's not an economist. She doesn't know what she's doing.
Right.
She's doing exactly what she's told to do. And she has the political power and the political connections to force through what they want done. That's why she's there. No more, no less. I spoke with Ira Harris about this last year a couple of times. And Ira, you know, had to set me straight about a couple of things, which was great because Ira's a phenomenal freaking he's a phenomenal mind. And he was so ahead of the curve on understanding the political fallout in Europe. And, of course, he was right about the euro going to $1.22 as well. So I'm looking at this going, yeah, this is what they're doing. It's got to be what they're doing. And why it's happening in Europe first and then London is because, well, they're going to start breaking the gold market now while they allow yields to rise. Or yields are rising and they can't stop it. And there's no way for them to stop it. Lagarde has doubled the amount of QE that she's doing, and German 10 years have moved 50 basis points against her.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, that, and it's Germany. I don't even have to watch Italy or Portugal or anything else. They may be in there keeping Italy under control, which they're not. And there used to be a trade where you can watch when they were beating the price, when they were buying Italian stocks, or Italian debt, they were running. They didn't have the ability, the bandwidth to buy German debt at the same time. So you see Italian debt go down and German debt rise. Like that was like 2018. That stuff was going on all the time. And then they stop buying Italian debt and they start buying German debt. It's just silly.
Right.
It's just silly.
It's really all they can do. Right.
That is exactly all they can do. And their goal, and they know that they're trapped. The Fed knows they're trapped at the zero bound, but they can't go negative because of the world's reserve currency. Mm-hmm. Can't start punishing people for holding the world's reserve currency. At that point, you stop being the world's reserve currency. And then you get hyperinflation. I don't think Powell is one of these guys. I don't think Powell's part of the whole Davos. I think he's part of a different faction. He comes from private equity. I think he's much closer to Goldman and, you know, and I've talked to some of my patrons about this who are, you know, professional traders and fund managers and they've told me like, yeah, Powell comes from a different mindset than the rest of the other central bankers like Yellen and Bernanke, which are all ivory tower Keynesians.
Right.
He's a different guy. And I think he might actually be trying to, you know, fight this in the best way he can. And that's why Basel III has to be implemented. Hmm. They're not going to put it off again.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's the next, you know, like every time you turn around, you see Davos thwarted in their plans to make the world safe for communism and green energy. They pull out another big stop. And like I said, Fauci throwing him under the bus and making COVID into a bioterror weapon. That's a big move. Throwing Bill Gates under the bus is a big move.
Catching steam. But, and you know, what Powell's due, he's done in February of next year, isn't it? 22?
Yeah.
So yeah, see which direction that goes. But then get back on this.
He won't be re-upped.
Yeah, and who do they replace him with at that point?
They'll replace him with a Janet Yellen clone.
Probably. Yeah, that type again. As this relates to present day, I don't know, in terms of QE and taper and all that kind of jazz and negative interest rates. I mean, do you follow that as well, Tom?
Oh, yeah. I mean, what are we running now versus the 3-year? I've heard from a number of good gold traders, and you can correct me if I'm wrong about this, Craig, but people tend to trade gold based on the 3-year yield, real yield, right? As an analogy to the 3-year yield. Well, when, you know, inflation came up 4.2% the other day, which is, by the way, understated.
Right.
You know, we're now at negative 3% on the 3-year. No, you know, no lie that the price of gold immediately started moving up. And of course, we're a month away from the cliff edge in Europe having to turn down, you know, European banks having to wind down their profitable gold, unallocated gold trade.
Right.
So that's putting upward pressure on the price. And then, you know, let's we've had a correction in Bitcoin, which was also engineered. And so money that was, you know, money, this is the thing about Bitcoin that so many people don't understand. Now, you know, I'm a huge proponent of Bitcoin, mm-hmm. and I've heard every argument to the contrary. I love both of them. I love gold and Bitcoin.
Me too.
I think you should own cash too, because we all have dollar liabilities on our own personal balance sheets. Don't be dumb, right? But at times the dollar is going to be good. But the thing about Bitcoin is, and it's real, that it's stolen a lot of gold's thunder. But at the same time, gold wasn't allowed to express its price rise because they controlled the supply of it.
Right.
And so therefore, actually, Bitcoin was doing gold's job at a time when gold wasn't allowed to do its job, and then has now forced everybody's hand. In my honest opinion, to square this circle, Bitcoin at $64,000, Ethereum at $4,000, is at $2 trillion, or in a crypto market of $2.5 trillion valuations, deeply embarrassing for these people in a way that a gold price at $7,000 an ounce would be, right?
Yeah.
Well, yeah. There you are. It did your job for you. I'm going to call him out. It did your job, Peter Schiff. Now shut up and get on the bandwagon and stop causing a fight between exactly. gold guys and crypto guys. We're on the same team.
Right. And there's people on the others on the Bitcoin team too. Why they continually want to say you have to dump your gold and own Bitcoin? What, I mean, I own both just like you do. It doesn't make any sense.
No, it doesn't make any sense. And I either believe that people are just so ideologically possessed that they're like, you know, they're the gold equivalent. They're like the gold equivalent of social justice warriors.
Yeah.
You know, just like MGTOWs are the social justice warriors of the right. I mean, it's the same thing. It's ideological possession. It's left brain possession. It's, you know, it's talking your book to the point of extinction because you've now carved out a space that you can't back down from because you're not willing to be flexible. And again, that's why I had to be flexible in my, you know, explorations in the gold market and start looking for different things in order to become a better analyst. So
Tom, as we wrap up,
sure.
I think your article definitely connects a lot of dots. If at the end of the day, though, you feel mm-hmm. pretty certain June 28th, the European banks are going to have to be out of this, or, you know, they're not going to have any incentive to keep continuing in the unallocated gold scam.
I think that's the case. I think if Alistair Crook is right, and I think if Martin Armstrong is right, and even Chris Whalen, you know, piped up on this as well. When guys like that, I'm not. Like I stand on the shoulders of giants. I'm the guy. I like to call myself. I'm like the poo throwing monkey that likes to throw stuff at the wall and see what sticks. I'm dead serious. Like I do a lot of this very intuitively, and I take in the information. I don't have, you know, the kind of specific knowledge of the guts of the ECB's balance sheet because I don't have time for that. I have to keep the big picture in mind. Kind of, and then throw stuff at the wall and see what sticks and spark the conversation. Because if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. I'm happy to be wrong, right? The point is to spark the conversation and get people talking about it and get people really thinking about what's going on. Because if that's the case, then there it is. And if those guys are right, and I bow to their wisdom on this, and I bow to their connections and all of that, then you're going to start to see Europe unwind their trading desks and put subtle upward pressure on the price of gold. I'd also like to point out, watch now, if that's the case, then we should see a trade emerging between German 10 years or the belly of the German yield curve and the price of gold. Like, they should be in lockstep with one another, because if the market is beginning to sense that that's what's happening, that the ECB's balance sheet is in trouble, then people are going to be moving into gold as an opposition trade. And it has nothing to do with the Fed. It has nothing to do with the US's fiscal position or any of that other stuff. Markets are global. And Europe, I still believe, is ground zero for where everything goes bad. And it's because of, I think, this is where the biggest push is coming from those that are trying to change the world politically. And since they're doing that, and that's where all the impetus is. And again, they have an agenda to, like, you know, get us off of oil in 9 years. These people are insane. You know, and playing chips and all those others. They're truly evil people. And they're not going to be dissuaded. They're going to go scorched earth in the process.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing that scares me the most.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's right in line with what a lot of people worry about here at TFMR, absolutely. Too. Because mm-hmm. We see them for who they are. Well, I tell you, you've done a wonderful job of connecting the dots. We're going to have to keep in touch, Tom, now
absolutely.
That we're connected. because there's a lot more than
time,
just Basel III.
I could have you on my podcast. I think it would be a fun time. I go for an hour, and I know my audience. You know, they don't care about an hour. So
just let me know. There's certainly no shortage of shit to talk about.
No, absolutely.
And we just, I mean, outside of Basel III, I mean, there's a lot of stuff we can get back and cover. So we'll keep in touch. But I wanted to get this out there so that people could listen to it over the weekend and get a feel for what an interesting month ahead we have.
Yeah, we haven't even gotten the silver. I mean, we got silver physical delivery happening right now while the Wall Street Bets guys are trying to silver shortage. They know exactly what they're doing. I find that really funny, right? They know exactly when to go after it, which
damn
is in
straight.
March and May. And if they don't get it done in May, they're going to go after it in July.
Yep.
It's going to be hilarious.
They are unrelenting. And you've got the fact that they've gotten the attention of so many of the regular shills, you know, mm-hmm. that stick up for the current system, tells you right there. I mean, what the flack when you're over the target kind of stuff, right?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Here's one last point.
Sure.
Think about how many guys didn't get fleeced in the Dogecoin pump and how much money they have now to use to bomb the silver market.
Yep. Yep.
That's the thing that so many people are missing. Like, I'm watching this going, oh, there's 1,000 freaking Dogecoin multimillionaires now that are going to be dipping their toes in and just waiting for the moment when they see the absolute opportunity to go in of maximal weakness and do ungodly amounts of damage to silver.
Yeah. And you think, yeah, I mean, this stuff about, I mean, the London silver market is structured to operate mm-hmm. the same way the gold market is. So, yep. I mean, the impacts on the banks to get out of, you know, their fractional reserve unallocated scheme in London for gold, what? Means in silver, too.
and don't kid yourself, China wants both of these things to happen.
Damn straight.
Because their market is a purely physical market over in Shanghai.
Yeah, they know where it's going. Yeah, no doubt about it. Tom, great stuff. Let's make sure we keep in touch. And I wish you a very relaxing weekend and maybe a not so relaxing June.
thank you, Craig Turd. I just want to call you Turd, man. I think that's the greatest moniker thing of all time. I still freaking laugh my poor tits off about this.
Mother used to call me Turd, so it just is what enough. It is. You can call me whatever you want, man. There's no problem with that. As long as the price is going up and we're going the right direction.
Right.
Tom, it's great to meet you. Again, Tom Luongo, Gold, Goats, and Guns at tomluongo.me. The webpage is on this podcast page. Check it out. Great information there, and great to have him on. Tom, thanks so much.
Thank you, Craig.
And from all of us here at TFMR, thanks for listening. We'll have another Thursday conversation next week.